Part of the attraction of football, great writing about the national sport, is the opportunity to see how the game itself has changed. The team representing Yale was once a national power. 60 years ago, the pro game was regarded as disreputable by those who regarded it at all. There are stories of those days in the collection, but there are also stories about today's magnificently prosperous NFL and the plagues afflicting retired players. John Shulian edited Football, great writing about the national sport for the Library of America. John, welcome back to Only a Game.
Great to be here, Bill. Thank you.
A lot of what's in the book first appeared in newspapers as late as the 40s and 50s. You write in the introduction that the press started out treating the game like a ne'er-do-well brother-in-law. Why was that?
I just think football didn't have the hold that it does today. One of the pieces in the book is from an oral history that a wonderful guy named Myron Cope put together. John McNally is the player's name, and one day he forgot that his team was playing on Sunday, and he went to scout another team, and somebody said, "John, what are you doing here?" He said, "Well, I've got to prepare for next week's game." He said, "But you're playing today."
Is that the guy who had the great line about there was no point in his going to any classes, and so he didn't?
Yeah, there you go. That was football in the early days. Actually, maybe it's still football today.
I was going to say, some things never change. I enjoyed the column Red Smith wrote about a Yale-Harvard game back in 1947 because Red Smith seemed to be having such fun doing the work. He wrote of the fans, quote, "It was a hairy crowd wrapped thickly in the skins of dead animals." One almost wishes he hadn't turned his attention to the game.
They're so different than what we read today. Everybody's getting excited about everything today. I mean, it's life or death. And Red really was just enjoying himself. He was taking you to the game and painting a picture of the entire scene and who threw the interception or who missed the block or the tackle really didn't bother him that much.
For me, one of the most powerful pieces in the book is Jennifer Allen's account of how her father, George Allen, responded to being fired as coach of the Rams. Is it fair to say that that kind of profile really could only have been written by a family member?
Yeah, that one definitely. You know, as a reader, I really felt for her father. And believe me, I covered George Allen when I was working at the Washington Post, and I did not have the same sort of sympathy for him then. On my first day on the job, I went up and introduced myself to him, and he said, "Oh, where are you from?" And I said, "Well, I've been working in Baltimore the last 5 years." And he said, "Oh, a Colts fan, huh?" And turned on his heel and walked away. And I think he regarded me forevermore as a spy for the Colts.
My sympathy doesn't go to Allen. It goes to his family. This guy was so wrapped up in football that his idea of a family fun night was to watch football films all together.
You know, he also only ate ice cream because he didn't have to waste time chewing. he was pretty nutty. But when he was out of coaching finally, and was taking everybody's calls, you know, I mean, he must have sat beside the phone all day. You really felt for the guy because he had to coach to live.
In this book, there are stories about former football stars who've done very well. Our own Charlie Pierce's profile of Archie Manning, for example. But also included is the story of the alcoholic and indigent former Tennessee great Bob Suffrage. Former pro Nate Jackson's account of drug abuse in the NFL is in there, and the story of Dave Duerson's dementia and eventual suicide. I wonder if those latter stories are in there because you didn't want readers to make the mistake of thinking of this as a volume that was simply a celebration of the game.
Football has certainly entered a dark period. I mean, it's still wildly successful and lucrative. But to not have those pieces in this book would not have been fair to readers or to the history I was trying to portray in some loose, scattershot way. This is what is happening. You know, the Duerson piece is just incredibly powerful. A guy who committed suicide, a former Bear, an all-pro safety. And he committed suicide by shooting himself in the heart so his brain would be intact for researchers to examine. Man. And yet, you read the Nate Jackson piece, which I loved. I mean, Nate Jackson is one of those rare treasures, an athlete who can really write. You know, and you see how much this guy loves the game. Mm-hmm. He both hates it and loves it. He hates what it's done to his body, and he hates the idea that he's really just a piece of meat to be tossed around on the great griddle of the NFL. And yet he loves it. He can't give it up. You know, I mean, and that all, I think, in a book that's honest about football has to be included.
John, when we do interviews with authors of books, we frequently put an excerpt from the book on our website. You will perhaps not be surprised that I've chosen as the excerpt this time around a piece from W.C. Hines.
Well, I think that's an excellent choice.
He starts the piece by saying, "I paid a dime to watch Red Grange carry the football."
I'm not sure what a dime gets you today. Nothing, I think.
You can't even make a phone call to ask about a ticket. John Schuiling is the editor of Football, great writing about the national sport, and he joined me from KPCC in Pasadena, California. John, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Bill, thank you. I really appreciate it.